where we could actually pay people for work here, and people could maybe start some arts projects or some something, right? Something that we could maybe put back in the community that would provide work and something to give back, right?
So why live here as opposed to, because you've been here 2 years,
yep.
You said?
Yeah, well, so, I've been here since our 4.5. But
okay. So why do you choose to live here as opposed to going into some other alternative form of housing?
Honestly, because the SRO system and it is an absolute joke. Like, they think that they're doing something good for the community, but it's not. There's nothing good for us in there. All these SROs, they're full of rats and disease and black mold. And I mean, the crews that work on these buildings won't even come in unless they're in full hazmat protection. But we have to live there, right?
And that's, let's pause for a second for the helicopter to fly away. It's pretty noisy.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I like watching them, but that's the first view that people come in. Yeah, I guess tourists come and get to see when they pull in. Yeah.
Or are you talking about the SROs?
Yeah, like I was at the Flynn Hotel for the longest time, and there's all kinds of violence and crap that goes on there, which is. Once again, it's about safety and feeling comfortable, and you know, we're stuck in the rooms in these SROs that are 90 square feet, right? And in some cases, two or three people are stuck in these rooms. They're full of cockroaches and bugs and everything else, and they say they clean up and they get the exterminators to come in. But all the exterminators do is try to keep the bugs in people's rooms, right? They spray along the doorways to keep them out of the hallways so people don't see them, right?
Right.
But they're in everybody's rooms, and it's just, like I said, people have to come and do work on the buildings. They won't even come in unless they're in full hazmat protection, but we're expected to live there, right? And that's just, I mean, that's not right. I mean, we're better off in these places. Like, I know I'm better off here. Like, I don't feel sick all the time. I don't feel run down. And I mean, in the SRO I was. It was just unhealthy buildings. They're 100 years old, and they're not maintained the way they're supposed to. Lead paint on the walls, and they don't want to take care of it. And they blame BC Housing, and then BC Housing blames them. And it's just a pass the buck situation, right? So no one takes responsibility for it. So that's why most people come here.
I know when. Like, for instance, the Strathcona Park camp was being taken down. You know, the promise was that everybody had housing. But I also understand a lot of the housing was pretty problematic, either very short-term or offered people no real freedoms.
Yeah, exactly.
That you'd expect as an adult. You know, no guests, you couldn't have to leave in the daytime, all sorts of things like that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's exactly like that. There's no guests, and if guests are allowed, it's one guest at a time, and they got to show their ID at the door or give up their ID, which they have no right to ask for in the first place, right? And yeah, like, we're all adults, and you treat them more like a youth detention jail or something, right? Like, I mean, I understand that they got to try to maintain some control, but, I mean, you have people that are, you know, they've come over to this province or even this country, and they're 20, 25 years old, and they went to school for a couple of years, and they're making life and death decisions for people's lives that are you know, full-grown adults in these SROs. And, you know, and then you got people that have lived in this world their whole life, and they can't make their decisions anymore. You got one meal coming in a day, and if there's not enough to go around the whole building, then all they say is, oh, too bad, it's not a meal ticket to give them or another option. And then, like I said, the cleanliness is, you know, whether you keep your room clean or not, the cleanliness issue is a big deal, right? And then they're given budgets to maintain these buildings, and I don't see the money going to where it's supposed to go to. Like, I mean, I've done a lot of construction over the years, and you know, getting the paint off the walls and we're getting the asbestos out and things like that is, you know, asbestos abatement is not that expensive. Like, it's, you know, I know the budget would cover it, and they don't do it. They don't care to do it. Like I said, they just pass the buck and the blame. And then their argument is that, you know, that we don't care, and that we just fight amongst each other and things like that. Well, you know, you limit the amount of guests and the people that we can have there, but then you take in people that are obviously going to be problematic in the first place, and you know, like, it just doesn't make sense, right? And then, yeah, it's supposed to be a stepping stone into something better, but it rarely ever goes to anything better, right? It rarely ever leads to anything to grow from, right? So that's my problem, I guess, Ro. That's my issue. Mm-hmm. We can walk around the park when I see it.
Sure.
It's in a bit of a state of disarray. That's kind of, I mean.
So do you feel like camps like this are kind of a model? Because homelessness has been here for
forever, right?
Forever.
And it's not going to go away.
And yeah, despite all the promises, it's not going away, and it doesn't seem to be getting less. So a camp like this, I think, perhaps a model for some folks?
That's what we're trying to do, right? That's the idea. I mean, like I said, it's in a bit of a state of disarray, but we try to do our best to keep it clean and everything. This is, not too sure at the moment. this is...
So I can see here there's lots of garbage cans to collect garbage. There's clear pathways for us to get around.
Yeah, it's definitely a homeless encampment, no doubt about it, right?
But I mean, there's also bins to collect all those.
Yeah, and we do that constantly. We do it every day. There's bins around. The city does provide us garbage that comes in and picks up. There's a lot of stuff that goes in and out of this place. So people go around picking up stuff and then bringing it here. So that's a constant ongoing battle that we're... Right, this is kind of my area here, so I'm trying to get it constantly cleaned up. But, you know, inside it's what you'd expect, right? But it's more the community that is here that supports each other and things like that. But it is a big, you know, I guess more attention course to clean up. We finally got this cleaned up here. See, it's just one step at a time, right? Like this was a mess 2 days ago. We got this all cleaned up. Now we just move on to the next one, right? Because when someone comes and goes, and that's kind of how it goes, right? Like, so it's only, but I mean, people do their best. They try to limit the amount of stuff they bring back and things like that, but we can't control everybody. At the same time, we don't want to be telling people what to do, right? But yeah, I mean, it goes both ways, I guess, right? That's what we're trying to work with the park board. It's going to be a two-way street, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you still have your issues here. It is homelessness, right? But it's still a much better much better place than anywhere else, right? And it's everybody is, you know, supportive of each other. And
right. So this is legal now.
Yep.
But what would you like to see?
Well, first of all, I want to see it cleaned up. First of all, I'd like to see us being a little more open to having not necessarily permanent structures, but more solid structures, because that would allow us to get rid of a lot of this mess. And at least, you know, like, we don't have to have it outside in the open like this if we had more structures like this one, right? But they stop us from putting this up, right? And they say it's a permanent structure, but it's not a permanent structure. It's not on a foundation. It's not on a form. There's nothing in the ground. There's nothing, right? You could knock this thing down in 10 minutes, right? But at least it's more solid and more, you know, housed than anything else. The yard still needs to clean up a little bit, but that's what I'd rather see than, you know, there is some mess. I'd like to see, too, you know, possibly a little more organization around the tents and whatnot, and maybe some color coordination with the tarping and stuff, so at least from the air, it looks like more like a community, right? But, yeah, like, you know, get the warming in there, and then this one is, there's a couple people that moved out down though, so.
So would you like to see something maybe with some sort of established pads to set up tents on, and maybe some weather cover?
I'd also like to build, a lot of us want to build, pallet houses and things like that, right? Little tiny home structures, things like that.
Right.
And it's easy to do, and there's a lot of skilled people here that can build them, right? Not to mention we have a lot of people that are supporting us in that and wouldn't mind donating to us, but they won't allow us to have them, right? Or if they do, they try to knock them down right away, right?
Right.
So that's what we're you know, in the process of trying to get past, too, little tiny home structures or... something like that, something to let us build our pallet houses, right? Like, I started building one, and they tore it down on me, and the pallet houses are a lot of work, but there's, you know, there's pallets everywhere out there that can be recycled and reused, and at least they're getting reused in that case, right?
Right.
You just gotta break them up and rebuild, right? The pallet houses work out pretty nice, though, right? There's, YouTube and whatnot have a whole bunch of, designs, and Google has a bunch of designs for pallet houses in there, and they're pretty nice little units, actually.
Right.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah, that would be...
And it would look better.
Dignified living for people,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and it would look more like the, you know, it's kind of more rustic looking, and it looks more like the park, right? But, it still is a tent city, right?
Yep.
But...
So, for, you know, I see the infrastructure. There's lots of... places for garbage and recycling collection.
Yeah.
I see there's a place to collect empty propane tanks.
Yeah, we try. I mean, during the winter time, like, we've got a donation set up that brings in our, Fiona knows about that, but they bring in propane for the warming tent, for the heaters in the warming tent. We try not to allow propane in all the tents, right? Because that's just a bit too much risk, right?
Yep.
We try to maintain the propane in the one tent, or into the barbecues for cooking, right? And then we pull them out of there and put them away when they're not to have, we have a person that maintains storage and keeps them locked up when they're not in use. So yeah, we try to be responsible around there. We try to keep fire extinguishers out, but our fire extinguishers have been used up right now.
Yeah. So I didn't see them, but there must be toilet facilities.
That's one of our, like, we've had outhouses brought in twice, and they leave here for a couple of days and then they take them back on us. So now we've got the two up there, which is exactly 225 feet is what it takes to walk over there. And we've got some older people living here that are senior citizens that aren't going to wake up in the middle of the night and walk 225 feet to get to a bathroom. Not to mention the park is pitch black, and there's a lot of females here that don't want to walk all the way over there in the middle of the night. And so that's an issue that we're working on right now, right? We've had outhouses brought here twice, and then the park board complains about them and says that they're you know, getting run down, or they're messy, or they're dirty. Well, they're outhouses, right? They're being used as outhouses. Like, I mean, the companies come in and clean them out for us, and just like they're supposed to do, but like any other outhouse, it's going to be... We treat it like an outhouse, right? Like,
yep.
And you know, so we've had it twice, and two times they've been taken away from us within 2-3 days, right? And then a shower system I'm working on for the whole camp right now.
Is there any shower washing facilities?
What we have is we have the old 44 Club. It's now called Watari. Yep. They closed that one down and they changed to 44, and it's just up over the bridge and about a 2-minute walk down the block. I believe that's Alexander there. Yep. And yeah, they opened that up to us now for laundry and for showers. So we'll go over there for now, right? They're open Monday to Friday, like 9 to 5. And that's a pretty nice setup. You don't have to wait in line to get a shower and whatnot. They got nice showers in there, so we take advantage of that for the moment. But I'm working on a structure right now with some plastic bins and some big bins and some shower curtains and some rods and an old hot tub system we had, like an old, or not old, one the tenants had, and an RV electric heater for the hot water tank. And I just got to get a good water supply, and hopefully that'll work to be like a mash tent shower setup.
Great. So for this, what would your number one ask be for this camp that you would like to see that isn't here now and you feel is really needed?
Definitely showers and outhouses are definitely, yeah, cleanliness and hygiene are most important, right? And yeah, this is something I got to stress and I got to agree with. I mean, the one thing we got to do is clean up a little bit and just make the place look better altogether.
Yep.
Those are definitely my things that I want to see for the camp is get the mess cleaned up, and then I'm going to try to spearhead another cleanup again. Yep. Last month it went really good, and we got everything cleaned up, and then just as quick as we get it cleaned up, it seems like it gets replaced, right?
It doesn't look too bad. It's pretty organized. The paths are clear.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And we try to do that at least, right? But yeah, I wouldn't mind getting it a little bit better.
It's a pretty nice day today. We've just had one of those... those Arctic rivers or whatever they call it come through in the last few days. What's it like here when it's raining and when it's really wet?
Even in the summertime at nighttime, because it's coming off the water, it gets cold at night, right?
Yeah.
It's nice during the day in the summer, and even like right now it's really nice. Mm-hmm. But when it gets cold, it gets cold, right?
Yeah.
It's probably colder here than it is actually in the city.
Yeah.
When once the sun goes down, she gets a little bit chilly, but I mean, the warming tent covers that, and you know, good blankets and good sleeping bags and whatnot, right? Insulated tarps, things like that.
What about the wetness when it rains? So does it drain pretty well, or do you get?
Everybody's kind of left on their own to figure out their drainage problems. Like, we have guys that like myself, and we have three or four of us. Like, I'm a trained automotive technician, and we got a couple guys that are trained in electrical and things like that. And so we try to help everybody. We try to come up with designs for everybody for like proper trenching and gravel and sand for drainage under the tents is what we like to see people do. Like, ideally, what we try to get everybody to do is put some pallets down with sand and then gravel and then a tarp on the top of that so that everything drains out. Because if you have pallets under your tent and it gets wet, they stay wet, right? So we try to get the drainage that way. As we're draining off, we have a little problem there. We're still working on getting some proper drainage flow. We're either going to try to get it into the marsh or... We try to avoid getting anybody draining anything into the ocean, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
We try to drain everything towards the marsh, right? As long as it's not, like, you know, people's waste, right?
Yeah.
We also push that everybody has, I don't know if you know, there's white water bins we have all around the camp that are, we call them white water and then gray water. Gray water is the dirty water. And anybody's got any water that they use for hand washing or clothes washing or anything else, we take up the bathrooms and put down in the sewage.
Yeah.
Instead of, we totally are against anybody throwing anything into the ocean, right? Any dirty water, anything like that. Basically, the drainage is a bit of an issue, but for the most part, it is what it is, I guess. It's it's cold and it's not ideal for most people, but it's what we got right now, right? And it's just a day to day. It's gotten a lot better since the start, right?
And what we started out with. You've been here 4 years. Do you see yourself staying here?
I'm going to be here for a bit more yet, yeah. Yep. Unfortunately, I never really pictured my life taking this turn, but I guess this is maybe where I have to work for a while. Maybe there's a bit of a calling for me to help other people.
Right.
With the way I live my life, maybe I can do some good by helping some change in some ways, right? And it seems like that's the direction it's taken, so.
Right. Do you mind talking about how you got here?
I moved to Vancouver when I was 12 years old when I first moved here. My family left me here. I was ended up on the streets homeless. That was in Richmond. I grew up there. I moved back to Calgary for a few years. Came back here again when my daughter turned 18 because basically the court took my daughter away because I was, you know, using drugs and was just on the street and homeless. I had no way having a kid when I was 17 anyway. But now once the court said I couldn't see her until I was 18 and... Or until she was 18, and when she turned 18, she wanted me to come back. So I always promised her that I would come back home as soon as if she called me. And so the day of Rachel's birthday, I got a phone call, and I said, "Does it mean you want me to come back?" And she said, "Yeah." So I was here 24 hours later, and I actually gave up drugs and quit cold turkey that same day. And it wasn't until a few years ago that I started using again. That's no excuse, but now my daughter lives in New Zealand.
Right.
But brought me here is just like everybody's got a story, but it's just, yeah, it's a life of. You know, I didn't grow up in a family that had anything. It was, grew up poor and just, you know, it just goes on year after year, right? Like, when you're raised in a family that doesn't have anything, it's hard to get anywhere, right? Or hard to see a way out. I mean, there are ways out, though, and it just takes a little bit of work, but it's just hard to see those avenues sometimes, right? And then, you know, mental problems are a bit of an issue, too, right? Like, a lot of us tend to have, you know, things like everything from seasonal affective disorder to bipolar, like I have bipolar issues and things like that. So sometimes holding employment isn't, I try my best to work as much as I can, right?
Yep.
Like I like to consider myself a working man, not a criminal, right? Like I haven't been in trouble with the law for almost 20 years now, so that's good. But it's sometimes holding a job and getting to work constantly regular for me are a bit of a hassle and whatnot. An issue is just that my mental state is so up and down that that's what I end up in these situations. The last place I had, I ended up in an argument with the landlord just because I can't even remember what it was about. It was probably about some stupid issue I was having that you know, the neighbors in the fourplex didn't like me, and he ended up evicting me. And it just turns bad for me with a lot of my social interactions, so that's why I end up in places like this.
Right.
And everybody else has got their story, but that's mine, right? I've always had a problem interacting socially, and I guess what I mean. Like for me, this has been a benefit for me because I've learned how to start interacting with the public and socializing with people, so it's helped me greatly actually in that way.
Does this feel like home for you?
At the moment, yeah, it actually does. I mean, maybe it is, right? Maybe some of us are just, you know, maybe this is what some of us don't need. Maybe some of us don't need a big white, you know, big house and a white picket fence and two and a half kids and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Some of us might just may just not be made for that kind of life, right?
Like, yes.
And so in some ways, yeah, it does. I mean, there's good and bad days, right? Like today's a good one. Some are bad, right? Some are depressing. It's just, yeah. But for now, it does, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for talking to me today, Clint. I really appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, I think it's an important that the larger community hears your voices.
Yeah, exactly.
Your own voices, not just, you know, everybody talking about you.
Yeah,
so thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, that was cool. Not a problem. Thank you.
That was Clint Brandon. He is a camp resident at the Crab Park Encampment and also a leader and advocate for the camp community there. That interview was done just before Christmas by me, Magnus Tiewald, right on the shores of Burrard Inlet at the Crab Park Encampment. I want to thank Fiona York for her assistance in helping to set this up. We've been covering the homeless here with here at CJSF for a number of years. We're going to keep talking to advocates for the homeless, advocates for the camp, and residents as themselves. It's always important to get to the voice of those who are most affected by homelessness, and that is the homeless themselves.
story of family love, detectives, alcoholics, and the saints above. Who tells the story of the family heart? We stand apart, we stand apart. Who tells the story of my long decline? It is mine, yeah, it is mine. Ooh, my status is the baddest. Ooh, my happiness is the saddest. Ooh, am I a coward or a traitor? I'm always at war with my nature. At the pool, no one wants to go, cause no one is a fool. Yet as a parent, well, you gotta try. You can't say why, you don't know why. Don't say that children are the hope for us all. It's not our call, that's not our call.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me again today is Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. Welcome to the program, Pablo.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about something a little different today.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, and that's in your garden, you guys grow tobacco.
That's right, yes. So Embark Sustainability has the learning garden, which is, at the beginning, it was started as a student initiative. Besides growing food, we also have a couple of garden beds put aside to grow indigenous crops.
Right.
And tobacco is one of those that we have got in conversations with the First Nations Métis Student Association in order to collaborate in growing tobacco, in nodding onion, wood sorrel, and sage.
And those are you're growing those, and how are those products used?
Yes, so we support the student groups that are interested in growing something. Mm-hmm. In this case, the First Nations FM Insa group. And it happens that a few years back, Leona Brown, who is an indigenous person who works towards establishing indigenous food ways in schools, mm-hmm. elementary schools in Vancouver, provide us with a bit of tobacco seeds, traditional right. tobacco seeds. And last February, I started a nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Was the good time to start planting tobacco in our garden. And then we contacted the FM Insa to see, they have a bit more knowledge about indigenous right. knowledge and tradition, how we can cultivate, as well the process of harvesting,
mm-hmm.
curating it, and as well later will be the distribution of the tobacco leaves.
Yeah. So one of the, we were talking a little earlier, and one of the things you're mentioning is that for Embark, you know, you've embarked on this initiative, but it's been really important to do it in the right way.
Correct. You know. Yeah. Particularly when it comes to indigenous knowledge and traditions, mm-hmm. We would like to be very respectful. We like to contribute with them, help to grow things, but as well, we would like their input and see how we can do it in the best way.
Yeah, because of course, one of the things about each of these products, the tobacco or sage or others, is they're used in ceremonies. So,
correct. Yeah. Yeah. So at the moment, there is a large movement throughout North America.
Abbotsford Mayor Ross Siemens has called for a meeting between the city, the Ministry of Housing, BC Housing, and the organizers of a protest homeless encampment set up at City Hall since June 29th. Brittany Maple is the program coordinator of Abbotsford Drug War Survivors and the executive director of the Matsqui Abbotsford Impact Society. I spoke with her on July 31st.
We just received a request this afternoon from the city for our availability. They're looking at arranging a meeting between us, BC Housing, the province, and the city. We are still awaiting the date and time for that, but we have suggested our availability next week, and we look forward to having the opportunity to discuss this proposal.
The proposal is what is outlined in the petition Abbotsford Council received for information on Tuesday this week, the last council meeting before it takes a summer break. The petition, signed by 98 people by July 22nd per the city's meeting agenda, called upon mayor and council to, quote, designate undeveloped municipal land to provide safe and legal camping spaces with appropriate facilities, unquote. Here's Mayor Siemens at the July 30th council meeting per the city's meeting archive.
I did meet with the Minister of Housing, and we will be sharing that petition with him and his staff.
I contacted Mayor Siemens for comment, and he elected to issue a statement via communication staff. Quoted in part, I requested a meeting take place between the city, ministry, and BC Housing to discuss next steps and start moving toward a resolution that includes meeting with the protest organizers to discuss their concerns directly. It is the responsibility of the province in addressing housing issues where there are gaps in types of social housing being made available, and by not having those gaps addressed, municipalities are bearing the brunt with little to no support. End of quote. I contacted the Ministry of Housing to ask for a comment, and Minister Ravi Kalon opted to issue a statement through communications staff as well, quoted in part. Encampments are not a safe nor a dignified solution to the ongoing homelessness crisis, which reflects the significant demand for housing in Abbotsford and the need to stop the cycle of homelessness and prevent future encampments. End quote. Maple seizes on Kalon's use of the word dignity.
We have individuals who feel that they experience more dignity and autonomy and authority in their own lives when they're living in encampments than they do in the shelter and housing programs that are being provided.
As of publication, Abbotsford Drug War Survivors petition has grown to 148 supporters. While Abbotsford City staff estimate there are about 31 people camped out at City Hall, along with 38 tents, 2 canopy tents, and a trailer. For Civil Radio, I'm Mike McCullough. This story was brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. For this story and more, visit frequencynews.ca.
Is that a normal part of your singing?
That's the way I've always sung. That's just my song.
Are there subliminal duets?
Absolutely not.
The Metal Meltdown, a show that brings you melody-driven heavy metal from around the world. Melting your ears every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Do anything for our kids. What parent wouldn't? I'm just glad they're still so young, so we can speak in code in front of them. But they must wonder why we're always camping.
Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.